For years now, presidents, religious leaders, and politicians have lobbied for a new world order. What they neglect to mention or may not know is that the new world order is neither new or orderly. Yet facing uncertain financial times is propelling the world to seek global unification. Is it really what's best? What are the possible ramifications? Dr. David Jeremiah retraces the steps of the New World Order and reveals how it is built on a foundation of chaos and confusion, as old as history itself, as he continues his series, The Coming Economic Armageddon. Now, here's David.
And thank you for joining us today. Today, we're going to go back and pick up the foundation for all of this, not only in history, but in our current situation, and then take a look into the future. We'll be talking about the New World Order today and tomorrow here on Turning Point, and I hope you will stay with us. This is from Chapter 2 of the book, The Coming Economic Armageddon. This is how I taught this to our people here at Shadow Mountain, and so we invite you to listen in as we explore this subject together in this series called The Coming Economic Armageddon. Now, I look at my calendar and I realize that we are exactly 1 week away from our first fall rally. Next Thursday night, we will be gathering in the Greensboro Coliseum at 7 p.m. to kick off the fall season for Turning Point. We will be making these books available to everyone who comes. You will be able to purchase this book at the event. We will have special opportunities for you to do that. We'll have copies of the study guides. We are going to be ready on Thursday night, next Thursday, to really roll out the new season for Turning Point and to encourage you with all of our hearts. We're going to have great worship. Charles Billingsley will be with us. We have the Hoppers with us that night. If you haven't already ordered your tickets for next Thursday night, there's still time to do it. If you go to our website, which is davidjeremiah.org/rallies, you can order your tickets and we'll have time to get them to you in the mail. If you wait much longer, you will have to go to will call to get the tickets. Let me remind you again, the tickets are free, but you must have a ticket to be at this event. So don't wait any longer. Time is growing short. Next Thursday in Greensboro. And then, of course, November the 4th, we're going to be in Washington, D.C. at the Verizon Center. And then November the 18th in Pittsburgh at the Consol Energy Center. We're having incredible responses to these events, and the request for tickets is very brisk, so don't wait till the last moment. Well, our minds are being stretched right now as we try to get our arms around what's happening in our world. In order to really have an understanding of the picture, we need to understand the new world order. Let's begin our discussion.
Even if you were not alive on Halloween in 1938, and I was not, you probably have heard of the terror that spread across the country that night over the airwaves of the CBS radio network. Orson Welles directed and narrated the Mercury Theater on the Air adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel, The War of the Worlds. It was the first radio play ever presented in a news bulletin format, supposedly chronicling the landing of men from Mars in New York City. A strident voice broke into the program with these words: "Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News." Now, of course, there wasn't any intercontinental radio news, but the gullible radio audience was catapulted into mass hysteria, and it spread across the whole nation as if it were actually happening. It took weeks to settle it down, months for people to believe that it didn't really happen. In fact, the reputation of the panic broadcast, which it became known as, has far exceeded the reputation of the book from which it originated. But The War of the Worlds was not H.G. Wells' only book about life-changing events on the earth. In fact, if history is any judge, it was certainly not the most important book he ever wrote. For in 1940, he published a nonfiction work called The New World Order. In his book, He wrote of the United States of the world and of the need to work out a clear conception of the world order, to dissolve or compromise our differences so that we might set our faces with assurance toward an attainable world peace. Now jump ahead in history to 1977, when space vehicles Voyager 1 and 2 were launched. You may not know that on those vehicles a gold record was attached, which was meant for any intelligent life that might be encountered along the way. Jimmy Carter wrote the message, and here was the message. This Voyager spacecraft was constructed by the United States of America, a community of 240 million human beings among the more than 4 billion who inhabit planet Earth, still divided into nation states, but rapidly becoming a single global civilization. We cast this message into the cosmos, a present from a small distant world. We hope someday, having solved the problems we face, to join a community of galactic civilizations. Thank you very much, Jimmy Carter. Obviously, he believed in the new world order. But now jump ahead once more to September 11th, 1990. We're getting closer to the present. President George Herbert Walker Bush is addressing the joint session of Congress, which had been called to deal with the Persian Gulf crisis and the federal budget deficit. And in his address, he repeatedly refers to the New World Order.
A new partnership of nations has begun. And we stand today at a unique and extraordinary moment. The crisis in the Persian Gulf, as grave as it is, also offers a rare opportunity to move toward an historic period of cooperation. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. At this very moment, they serve together with Arabs, Europeans, Asians, and Africans in defense of principle and the dream of a new world order. 100 generations have searched for this elusive path to peace, while 1,000 wars raged across the span of human endeavor. And today that new world is struggling to be born, a world quite different from the one we've known, a world where the rule of law supplants the rule of the jungle, a world in which nations recognize the shared responsibility for freedom and justice.
4 months after he gave this speech, Bush gave another one. And in that speech, he talked about the new world order. 2 months after that speech, he gave another speech in his address to Congress commemorating a successful conclusion to the Gulf War. He once again talked about the new world order. He said, "Now we can see a new world order coming into view." Ladies and gentlemen, in all of history, there has never been a greater advocate for the New World Order than George Herbert Walker Bush, a Republican. Now fast forward once again to November of 2008, when Nobel Peace Prize winning former Secretary of State and Assistant to the President for National Security, Henry Kissinger, wrote, "Now that the clay feet of the economic system have been exposed, this requires a new dialogue between America and the rest of the world." And of course, what he's talking about is his impression that our current president, Barack Obama, is the greatest hope we have for accomplishing the new world order. So we've got a Republican president and a Democratic president. One is an advocate, one is an activist, all pointing toward making our world one. And then it's not just in the political realm. The Pope, in his encyclical letter of July 2009, wrote these words, "In the force of the unrelenting growth of global interdependence, there is a strongly felt need, even in the midst of a global recession, There is an urgent need of a true world political authority. He went on to say, furthermore, such an authority would need to be universally recognized and to be vested with the effective power to ensure security for all. Even Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad called for a new world order based on world ideas. Now, what is there about a new world order that unifies the minds of thinkers and scientists and presidents and politicians and religious leaders? Economist and best-selling author Larry Bates writes, I have said for many years that the term New World Order is merely a code word for one world socialism with an elite ruling class to govern the rest of us under their demonic system. As many have observed, the New World Order is not new, nor is it orderly. It is old. It is built on a foundation of chaos and confusion that is as old as history itself. In fact, the first appearance of the New World Order is found in the book of Genesis. I've called this the ancient appearance of the New World Order. It is in the 11th chapter of Genesis that we encounter this first attempt of a new world order. The post-flood civilization, after Noah's flood, is described as possessing a unity of language, a natural nomadic element that caused them to journey from place to place. And at last, according to the text, they came to the land of Shinar, which we are told was a very fertile land. It is the place where Iraq is today. It is the historic place of Babel. And the Bible says they decided to dwell there. And if you've read Genesis 11, you know that soon the leaders of this first new world order decided to build a tower to celebrate their unity and their power. The two idols of their heart in Genesis chapter 11 were security and significance. The security to control their circumstances and the significance of creating a city and tower that would magnify their name. This was an act of rebellion against God, whose purpose concerning the nations is spelled out in Acts chapter 17. You know, God established the nations after the flood. And these people got together and they defied God. It was their purpose to come together in a new world order and literally to build a tower that reached to the heavens. What was wrong with it? Well, Paul answered that question for us when he spoke to the Athenians in Acts chapter 17. I never really saw the significance of this passage before, but listen to what he said in Acts 17, 26 and 27. And God has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth. And God has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. God scattered men and set the boundaries of their habitation, according to Paul, so that men would seek after God. But the people of Babel decided not to seek after God. They decided to seek their own self-interest, and relying on their own powers, they would reach up to God. This original new world order was driven by pride and self-sufficiency and fear and rebellion. It was a clear echo of Satan's ambition, as described by Isaiah. I will ascend into heaven, said Satan. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will be like the Most High. The men and women of the Babylonian culture, the first New World Order, decided to defy God's separation of the nations and come together and build their own world and become their own God. And God knew that this first attempt to build a new world order would succeed beyond the wildest dreams of its founders. And the danger of such a plan to future generations and the threat of this man-made order to the people of faith was so great that God determined to shut it down in its inception. And I love the way Eugene Peterson describes what happened as he paraphrases Genesis chapter 11. Here's what he says. God came down to look over the city and the tower those people had built. And God took one look and he said, one people, one language. Why, this is only a first step. No telling what they'll come up with next. They'll stop at nothing. Come, we'll go down and garble their speech so they won't understand each other. Then God scattered them from there all over the world, and they had to quit building the city. That is how it came to be called Babel, because God turned their language into Babel. And there God scattered them all over the world. Prophecy student David Breeze has written, I think we need to understand, people, that political internationalism is not the will of God. Nationalism is God's will. And he has ordained individual nations and not a complex of nations. When men try in their own unregenerate power to put together a complex of nations and make them cohere without God, then you have built into the complex the seeds of its own destruction. And that's exactly what will happen to the future world order that men are working on now. I had been reading Max Lucado's book on fear. This never happens to me. Read a book on another subject, and in that book, there's something about what you're preaching on that has nothing to do with the title of the book. But lo and behold, in the midst of Max Lucado's book on fear are these words about the Tower of Babel. The nations that spread out after Noah's flood decided to circle their wagons. Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Lucado writes, do you detect the fear in those words? The people feared being scattered and separated. Yet rather than turn to God, they turned to stuff. They accumulated and they stacked. They collected and they built. News of their efforts would reach the heavens and keep their enemies at a distance. The city motto of Babel was this, the more you hoard, the safer you are. So they hoarded. They heaped stones and bricks and mutual funds and IRAs and savings accounts. I don't think so. They stockpiled pensions, possessions, and property, and their tower of stuff grew so tall they got neck aches looking at it. We are safe, they announced at the ribbon-cutting ceremony. No, you aren't, God said. And the Babel builders began to babble. The city of one language became the glossolalia of the United Nations without the interpreters. Doesn't God invoke identical correction today, wrote Lucado. We engineer stock and investment levies. We take cover behind the hedge of hedge funds. We trust annuities and pensions to the point that balance statements determine our mood levels. But then come the Katrina-level recessions and the downturns, and the confusion begins all over again. In this first New World Order at Shinar, mankind builds a city and a tower to distance themselves from God and assert their independence. However, the Bible ends with the New Jerusalem coming down to earth from heaven so that God can be with his people. The ancient appearance of a New World Order. This stuff we're dealing with right now began in Genesis chapter 11. Can you get over it? So now let me tell you about a modern attempt at a new world order. Our current attempt at a new world order is symbolized by the United Nations, headquartered in New York City. Now, you may not know this, but we fund that organization more than any other nation in the world. At the same time, we are at the wrong end of the criticisms of every nation that's a part of it. Kind of a strange thing. You know, I tell people who work for me, don't be my critic, because I can get critics free. Why should I pay for one? Right? Amen? Well, in the United Nations, we pay to be criticized. Now, the United Nations is an interesting picture of the New World Order. For instance, there's an 18-acre campus within the city of New York. It is actually international territory, the sovereign territory of the world, not the property of New York, not the property of New York State, and not the property of our nation. It exists in a vacuum in the city of New York. And it's interesting if you visit the United Nations to see how much of biblical stuff is there. Totally misunderstood, but there nonetheless. For instance, there's a mosaic called the Dove of Peace given by the Vatican. There is a peace bell from Japan. There's a statue called Let Us Beat Swords into Plowshares from Russia. Here's my favorite. There's a bronze 45 caliber revolver twisted into a knot, a gift from Luxembourg. Everywhere you look around the United Nations grounds, there are artist renderings portraying the world's desire for peace. Within the United Nations Security Council, which is primarily responsible for maintaining the peace and security of member nations, is an immense stained glass window, the creation of artist Marc Chagall. It's called the Peace Window. And the window is divided into two spheres by the tree of the Garden of Eden. At the bottom, close to the tree's root, is the snake, while the cross of Christ is depicted at the top right center in the corner. Chagall reportedly took his inspiration for this masterpiece from the Bible. But for all of its good intentions, the United Nations, since its inception, has been an example of bureaucracy run amok. It is overrun with fraud and pointless debates and international mismanagement and ludicrous behavior. For instance, in 2005, under the Secretary General Kofi Annan, the United Nations had been charged with investigating human rights abuses in member nations. In 2006, the Human Rights Commission was put together, including these members: Sudan, Zimbabwe, China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Every single one of these countries have themselves been accused of major human rights violations. It sounds like sending the fox to guard the hen house. In Rwanda, the United Nations peacekeepers did nothing to prevent 800,000 Tutsi deaths. In Bosnia, UN peacekeepers failed to protect approximately 8,000 Serbs. In Darfur, some of the worst human rights abuses of recent times continue, despite UN peacekeeper presence. But perhaps the greatest failure of the United Nations is her unfaithfulness to member nations. In 2005, former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan went on record with this pledge of support for Israel. He said, "A United Nations that fails to be at the forefront of the fight against anti-Semitism undermines its future. That obligation binds us to the Jewish people and to the state of Israel." But it was only words, because Israel continues to be the number two enemy of the United Nations. And here's a sad illustration of that. Since 1977, every November 29th, the United Nations has held an International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. But shamefully, the United Nations waited until January 2005 to commemorate the Holocaust of the Jewish people. The worst tragedy in the history of the world, and they reluctantly recognize it.
Really is hard to understand when you listen to what I have been teaching. It's hard to understand that we are not more concerned about all of these things than we are. And I think what happens is we just sort of get lulled to sleep by the continuing passage of time, and then all of a sudden we look up and realize how far we have moved away from our foundations. This series will help us understand that, and what we do with it, of course, will be up to us. Let me remind you again that the book, The Coming Economic Armageddon, is available from Turning Point for a gift of any size during the month of October when you respond to this series by sending a gift to Turning Point. And we encourage you to make it as generous as you can so that you can help us with what we're trying to do. But regardless of the size of the gift, when you send a gift to Turning Point, we'll be happy to send you a copy of this book as our way of saying thank you. Here's another way we can help you going forward in this series. We've created a little card with 9 biblical principles of money management that will change your life, and it's right from the scriptures. It'll show up in the last message in this book, but we've created this card as a way to encourage you right now. They're absolutely free. You don't have to do anything to get them except ask for them. Do it today. And we'll see you right here tomorrow.
If you'd like more information about Dr. Jeremiah's new series, The Coming Economic Armageddon, visit our website at davidjeremiah.org/radio. When you do, look for two great ways to stay connected to Turning Point. Sign up for your free copy of our monthly magazine, Turning Points, or Daily Turning Point, our daily e-devotional. Sign up today by visiting davidjeremiah.org/radio or call us at 800-947-1993. That's 800-947-1993. When you call or visit online, request this month's resource, The Coming Economic Armageddon. This new book by Dr. David Jeremiah addresses aspects of the economic changes in our world and reminds us to keep our trust in God alone, our only true source of safety and security. Order this book for a gift of any amount. Just call or click today. This is Mark Larson. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series, The Coming Economic Armageddon, on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.